I will be reading this morning from Isaiah 9, 1 through 7, and Luke 2, 1 through 7. But there will be no gloom for those who were in anguish. For in the former time he brought into contempt in the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. And in the latter time he will make glorious way the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them the light has shined. You have multiplied the nation, and you have increased its joy. They rejoice before you, as with the joy at the harvest, as people exult when dividing plunder, for the yoke of their burden and the bar across their shoulders. The rod of the oppressor you have broken, as on the day of Midian. For all the boots of the trampling warriors and all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace. For the throne of David and his kingdom, he will establish and uphold it with justice and righteousness. From this time onward and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. Now, Luke 2, 1 through 7. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was the governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn.
Hi, Joseph. I just came by to see how you were and to let you know that I completely understand how you feel. I wanted to buy you a stool. No, I wanted to buy you a tool. So I went to the hardware store, but the man there wasn't much help, so I thought that this was cute. And then I got you some flowers because I know a lot more about flowers than stools. I mean, tools.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's really nice to hear your voice.
3 months is a long time.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You look great.
Oh, I've gained some weight. Too many Zonker bagels. You look tired.
Well, I haven't been sleeping too well lately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
What happened to your arm?
Oh, this. Well, I woke up this morning and it really hurt. I figured it was something that it was probably when I maybe. I have no idea what happened, Mary. It really hurts, though.
Did you have a bad dream or fall off the bed?
Something like that. Yeah, I think so. Mary.
Joseph.
I don't know what to say.
I don't blame you for leaving.
Your parents said you went to Aunt Elizabeth's house.
Yeah. Oh, Aunt Elizabeth's.
Yeah.
She finally had that baby. He came out kicking and screaming. His name is John. He loves bugs. And he likes to play in the water. And well, Uncle Zach is finally talking again, and I finally understand what's happening to me.
I don't, oh, Mary, but it...
Joseph, if you could just see Aunt Elizabeth and that baby, it's just a miracle, but I know, it's not fair for me to ask you to believe without seeing. I mean, one minute we're in this restaurant dancing, and the next minute I'm pregnant. Of course you just left.
Mary, let me finish. I don't need to understand everything right now. What was I supposed to do? So we're having a nice dinner, and we're dancing, and then it's, oh, hey, by the way, I'm pregnant. But I was the one who left. Mary, I'm so sorry I didn't trust you and believe you. You are still the best person that I know, Mary.
What are you saying?
I'm saying there's no one I want to spend the rest of my life with than you. I mean, help me out here, Mary.
I'm pondering. You know, I came here today thinking that you you never wanted to see me again.
Well, Mary, nothing could be further from the truth than that.
But Joseph, what is happening to me, to us, is so important that God is trusting us with this baby. You know that I love you more than anything in this world, except this baby. If you marry me, you marry us.
How about Saturday?
What?
It's only Tuesday. That's lots of time, right?
No, come on.
You've got a dress.
Yeah, I doubt it will fit me.
You can wear anything, Mary. You'll be beautiful.
No, it's... This is not possible.
All right, well, let's try it this way. Mary, will you and this baby...
His name is Jesus.
Okay. Will you and this baby, Jesus, let me be a father to him and a husband to you?
Yes. That would be nice. That would be very nice.
Well, the Bible doesn't give us this scene, does it? But it still isn't hard to imagine, is it? We can imagine it because Mary and Joseph were human, like us, and because the Bible tells us that Joseph planned to divorce Mary over this. We can easily imagine that before Mary and Joseph's road trip to Bethlehem could even get started, it nearly stalled out at a dead end. Because we know that, like us, Mary and Joseph had some serious things to contend with in order to choose the road trip God had invited them on. As Ted Lee and Ingrid once again help us to see, for Mary and Joseph, as for all of us, going on a road trip meant accepting, not just letting some things go, as we explored Sunday, but accepting and embracing something big, new, and even scary, which is what we'll dig into today. And let's start with this. Embracing a road trip with God requires embracing an incredible amount of mystery. I mean, did you catch that line in there? Of all the profoundly gentle, touching moments in this scene, the one line that makes me catch my breath every time is that one when the two of them are still dancing around the awkwardness, interrupting one another, and Joseph suddenly spits out, "Mary, let me finish. I don't need to understand everything right now." I mean, move over Hallmark Christmas specials, right? What a moment. Because indeed, following God into a road trip is absolutely choosing to say, I don't understand everything right now, but I don't need to. And let's be clear. This road trip doesn't come with any assurances that things are going to be easy just because we went on it. What happens to Mary and Joseph as soon as they're on this road trip? Well, they end up at their destination only to not have a place to sleep, let alone to give birth to a baby. The mystery leads them to challenges that are themselves wrapped in more mysteries. And as this scene goes on to show, embracing God's road trip isn't even limited to embracing mystery. It's often about embracing one another in forgiveness, too. Just as Mary and Joseph had to reconcile their relationship before starting their road trip, so often our dead ends are connected to hurts that involve other people, too, right? People that may have wronged us, people that we may have wronged, probably some of both. I mean, even if you hit your dead end all by yourself, it's nearly impossible to deal with a dead end nicely. It tends to bring out the worst in us, even if only for brief moments. We lash out, we act coldly, we just cut ourselves off from people, because that's just what we do at a dead end. And so, embracing God's road trip when we've hit a dead end usually requires some forgiving going around, forgiving others, asking forgiveness from others, maybe more than anything, choosing to forgive ourselves. Now, that's not to say that you need to have forgiveness all worked out in order to embark on God's road trip. True forgiveness is not something that we can rush, and it may even be that the person who has hurt you will never apologize, or that the way that they hurt you is something that you should probably never forget, totally. But embracing God's road trip means, at the very least, moving on from dwelling in hurt. Moving on with at least the spark of a hope for reconciliation someday, even if the specifics of that day are totally foreign and impossible for us to imagine. In fact, building on that, going on a road trip with God almost always means embracing relationships that might even feel risky. Mary remained with Joseph despite the imperfection of his response to her. Joseph remained with Mary despite his lack of certainty about her faithfulness to him, maybe even questions he had about her faithfulness to God. On top of requiring us to accept mystery and move towards reconciliation, embracing a road trip with God usually means initiating, renewing, or deepening relationships. A road trip with God could mean choosing to befriend or stick with people who feel risky to us because of their imperfections or in spite of uncertainties we have about them. Because we rarely go on road trips all by ourselves. God's plan for us usually involves at least one or two other people, if not a whole bunch of people. But more than all that, on top of all that, in this scene, we have Mary's insistence that Joseph not just embrace her, but also embrace this baby. In fact, we have Mary's insistence that Joseph not just embrace this as any old baby, but that Joseph embrace this as the baby Jesus in particular. To take their road trip, Mary and Joseph had to embrace mystery and forgiveness and relationship. And in order to do all of that, they had to recognize that this wasn't their road trip. This was a road trip with God, a road trip to meet Jesus, a road trip rooted in so much mystery and so much need for forgiveness and so much deepening of relationship that it could take them way beyond what they could ever have imagined by themselves, that it could weather the storm of all their inevitable failures along the way, that it could knit them together to one another and to all of humanity and to their Creator despite all of their inevitable fears and selfishness. In short, in order to take this road trip, in order to be able to deal with what it would take, They had to trust that God could give them new beginnings that they could never manufacture on their own. The very kind of new beginning that we now know came with the birth of their son, Jesus. And so here, on the cusp of Christmas, we pause to ask one another, when you think of that dead end in your life that you've brought to mind through Advent, and when you think of the ways that God might be pointing you away from that dead end and towards an unexpected road trip instead, when you think of what you need to let go of, when you think of what you need to embrace in order to actually get started, when you sit down in the driver's seat, key in the ignition, ready to turn it, what are you waiting for? If you still haven't turned that key, maybe there's just one more thing. If you're like me, maybe the last thing is this. On the cusp of a road trip, having abandoned your tent in Dead End Valley and inserted your key into the ignition, building up the confidence to turn that key, if you're like me, maybe your one last thing is this. It's the fear that you're going to fail all over again. It's the memory that you also thought you were streaming up God's mountain when you hit this dead end in the first place. It's the fear that if you try again and fail again, you may end up even more disappointed and disillusioned than you are now. Maybe it's even the fear that what landed you at this dead end is your fault and that you'll just make the same mistakes again. Or that the fact that you hit this dead end in the first place makes you unworthy to be on a road trip with God ever again. Often, when we work through all of the other stuff, that's the last thing holding us back. The fear of another failure. The guilt of previous mistakes. The deep down creeping in cynicism telling us that hope is just a lie that naive people tell themselves in order to feel better. Maybe you're in the driver's seat, key in the ignition, and there's still that. And so, if it helps, let me say this. Remember where we left off in Isaiah last Sunday? Last Sunday, we found Isaiah speaking to King Ahaz, warning him not to give in to dead-end thinking. Ahaz, king of Judah, saw his two northern neighbors marching in his direction, and he and Judah trembled like trees in the wind. And so Ahaz planned to appeal to an even more powerful neighbor, Assyria, to form an alliance to repel these invaders. Except that everyone knew that Assyria was not the kind of nation you made true alliances with. It was the kind of nation you sold out to in order to receive their protection. And so, in other words, when we left this story in Isaiah, Ahaz was stuck at a dead end and he was engaged in dead end thinking. Deciding that if he was going to be at this dead end anyway, he may as well choose it for himself by inviting Assyria to defend Judah by taking over. And Isaiah was bringing a message from God saying, "Don't do it. God has got your back." And Isaiah was bringing a message from God, but Ahaz didn't listen. Today's text picks up the story later, when despite all of Isaiah's warnings, King Ahaz has now officially sold Judah out to the Assyrians. At a dead end, Ahaz had to choose between dead-end thinking and trusting God enough to go into an uncertain future, and Ahaz, we now find out, chose dead-end thinking. So here's the thing. Where we pick up in today's passage in Isaiah, Ahaz, despite receiving a message and a sign from God, has chosen dead-end thinking, and he and Judah are now suffering some consequences. He's living in his decision's gloom, today's text says. And as we sit on the precipice of embracing a road trip with God, today we pause with our hands on that ignition keys to stare down some gloom too. That last moment of gloom that might threaten us and prevent us from turning the key. Because maybe like we, like Ahaz, engaged in some dead-end thinking at our dead end too. And now we're wondering if we're really good enough for this road trip, if God even wants us on this road trip anymore. But here, my friends, is the thing. Here is the beautiful thing. Despite Ahaz and Judah's incredible unfaithfulness, despite how guilty and broken we too can feel because of our dead ends, despite how strong that final fear of turning the key in the ignition can be for us, here is the message from God that broke through Judah's gloom, speaking to the nation that had thrown itself away, even when God was begging them not to. Here is the message that nevertheless still rushes in from God. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. They rejoice, as with joy at the harvest, for the yoke of their burden and the bar across the shoulders, the rod of their oppressor, has been broken. For all the boots of tramping warriors and all the garments rolled in sense of what had just happened with Jesus, they realized that Isaiah's text had prepared them for Jesus, too. After the people of God's long history of living in darkness and oppression, after all of the darkness that all of the world so often has to live in, after all of the dead ends, and even worse, after all of our decisions as individuals and communities and nations to engage in dead-end thinking, after all of that, God's message through Jesus was still, the people who walked in darkness will see a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of deep darkness, on them light still shined. The yoke of burden can be broken. Even soldiers' boots and garments rolled in blood can be burned as fuel for the fire. For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And guess what? Just as that old message to ancient Judah roared back to life for the first Christians, its fires continue to roar for us today, if we let it. Sitting with your key in the ignition, waiting for the courage to embrace a road trip that is too mysterious to even understand, a road trip that may require a heavy posture of doubt, a hard posture of forgiveness, reconciliation, openness to risky relationship. Facing down that one last fear that you've failed too often to deserve this, that you've made too many mistakes to be redeemable, that this could all just end in another disappointment and more hopelessness. Can you hear God's message calling out from ancient history, but still true as ever, proclaiming with nothing but love and joy, even people who walk in all that darkness will see a great light. For unto them, friends, unto you, unto us, a child is born, a son is given. To the people living under the thumb of an oppressor that they knowingly and unfaithfully sold themselves out to, that light still broke through the darkness. To the people who had waited and waited and waited for God to restore their kingdom, that light still broke through the darkness. To a world waiting for its cycles of violence and destruction to be interrupted, that light still broke through the darkness. To a young couple on a confounding road trip with God, forced to give birth in a stable, that light still broke through the darkness. And so now the question is, as you sit at your dead end, facing the opportunity of a new road trip ahead, hand on the ignition key, will you look for it too? Perhaps for you, it's the beginning of a new relationship, the first seeds of a new understanding of your calling in life, the acceptance of something you've lost that you dearly loved and wanted to hang on to, a renewed sense of purpose grounded in opportunities that you never expected, that feel totally foreign to you. Whatever it is, it could feel super undefined and strange to you right now. It could just be a tiny thought that has been nagging you to give it a little bit more attention. It could be something that's been right in front of you for a long time, but which you're suddenly feeling called to stop and pay attention to in a new way. It may still be the tiniest mustard seed of hope in your otherwise disconsolate soul. But that light still breaks through the darkness. Can you see it? Because even if you're not looking for it, even if you've chosen to turn away from it, even if your glasses feel so dirty that you can't tell if it's a light or a speck of dirt on your glasses, that light still breaks through the darkness. And so today, this Christmas, will you take the leap of faith? Will you turn that key and embrace it?